Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to the Red Box Politics Podcast in the Times. I'm Matt Jawley. This is the second in our series of special Beyond the Fringe episodes, speaking to some of the political acts taking shows to this year's Edinburgh Fringe. I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Ford, star of Unspun on Dave and host of the Political Party podcast. He takes his show Brexit Pursued by a Bear to the Pleasance. And Grace Campbell, whose dad is Alistair Campbell, is at the Gilded Balloon with her show Why I'm Never Going Into Politics. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
So the first pitch is, if you're out flying, maybe you're too posh and successful now to do your own flying, but if you were out flying, what's your pitch to someone in the streets of why should come and see your show? Let's start with you, Grace. And I pointed out who your dad was because it's interesting that having had a dad who's been in politics and still is, you are so determined not to go into politics.
Well, that's my pitch, probably. My dad's Alistair Campbell. I grew up in politics.
Come and see my show.
And I'm an activist and I've worked a lot in the kind of feminist campaigning area since I was like 17 years old, but I have decided to kind of write a show which is all about a rejection of Westminster, basically, by someone who was born the month her father started working for Tony Blair, whose third birthday was ruined by the general election of 1997. My life has been dominated by politics. So it's not like, oh, hi, my dad's Alistair Campbell, come and see my show. It's like, I'm writing about my life, which has been quite bizarre at times, and it's quite feminist. And I also talk lots about sex and masturbation. So it's got a good mix.
Quite similar to yours, Matt.
I'm definitely coming.
Now, the interesting thing, I was looking at the blurbs for the Ed Fringe, and Grace's is very detailed. She talks about, you know, as she was saying, her dad's Alistair Campbell, worked closely with Tony Blair for many years, co-founder of the Pink Protest, expect vagina jokes, mental health in Parliament, anecdotes of hanging out with Putin's kids. We'll come on to that in a sec. Matt, yours is just, join Britain's leading political comedians. He once again promises his last show as an EU citizen, maybe, and then a load of reviews. My sense is that when you wrote this, you didn't know what your show was going to be about.
I think you're absolutely right.
It's a good pun again. Brexit Pursued by a Bear.
I'm running out of Brexit puns, and I'm trying to do ones that other people wouldn't do. And the danger with doing ones that other people wouldn't do is that you do ones that other people can't understand, or that it's gibberish. But I think at least it's silly. So it says, you know, it's Brexit, but it's daft. So it's
not. What were the less good rejected ones?
Oh, God. Oh, God. Fire Brexit. You know what? I've got a Word document on my laptop of about 100 shit Brexit puns. And if that's the one that got through, imagine. Imagine how bad
that
was.
And last year it was Brexit Through the Gift Shop.
Brexit Through the Gift Shop, yeah. It's kind of, it sort of says what it is on the tin, that it's going to be a satirical comedy show, but it's not overly serious. It's a muck about. It's funny.
And if you spent the last month, 6 months, year with people saying, oh, I bet you're going to have to rewrite it all now, aren't you?
Yeah, the last sort of 5 years. The last 5 years, basically since the Scottish independence referendum, it's been so volatile. So in 2014, there's a referendum, 2015 election, 2016 a referendum, 2017 election, 2018 a leadership contest. So just constant. But I think that's good for me, because if it's kind of, I would far rather we lived in calmer times. I actually loathe the period we live in. But for writing satirical comedy, I'm angrier now than I've ever been at politics. Probably for the same reasons you are.
Mm.
And I think that's quite a good way, I think that's a good starting point for creating, you know, a show or art of any sort.
Do you think you need that sort of reaction, so it's not just a sort of list of puns or amusing observations? Does it need a bit of grit in it?
Maybe not. I mean, not necessarily. It depends on the comedian, you know. I should point out, it's not going to be some sort of diatribe. It still is the same sort of comedy that I'm used to doing. I'm just maybe a bit more passionate about it now. So I don't think you necessarily need it. It depends on the comedian, you know. Alexei Sale needs to get angry. Tim Vine doesn't. You know, it just depends on what sort of comedy you're doing, I guess.
Mine's quite angry. At bits.
But what are you most angry about?
That Boris Johnson's our Prime Minister.
And that's it.
And he's
an hour.
A terrible, terrible person. No, I mean, there's lots. But I try to sort of balance it between no one finds activists funny ever. So when I started doing stand-up, I was, like, never introducing myself as an activist. Even though I worked on, like, the No More Page 3 campaign when I was still at school, I was always really feminist. But I always think when you say I'm a comedian and activist, the activist just subtracts the comedy from your introduction. Yeah. So I, like, in writing this show, it's been really interesting in getting that balance of, like, I'm making a point, but I'm not preaching. You know, like, I'm still here to be funny and to make you laugh.
And so does the comedy come first?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. The show, I think it's pretty funny, and I think I've made lots of different types of people laugh with it, because I've really, there's just a lot of mix of stuff in there, but there are bits that aren't that funny. There are bits, you know, where I talk about my mum and the effect that, like, my dad's career had on her and stuff like that. So it's just a mixture, but yeah, comedy comes first for sure.
And so how do you go about writing it? How do you get to the point of having 55 minutes to take to Edinburgh?
For me, it's been a real rush. I only started doing stand-up last April.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
And then 3 months in, I was like, I know what my show's
going to be. April this year?
April last year.
Okay.
No, April 2018. And then in July last year, I was like, I'm going to take a show to Edinburgh next year. Everyone thinks I'm crazy and just too cocky. I know what it's going to be about. It's called Why I'm Never Going Into Politics. I had the idea for a show then, so I've literally just been working on it since then. So it's because I knew I'm overcompensating from lack of experience, I've just put in a lot of work in the last year.
And how much has that been performing it live and trying stuff out?
A lot. Yeah, I've been previewing it since February because I'm so scared.
But that's so exciting because what you've got that so few comedians will ever have is an actual story you know you want to tell. So people have stories within them based on, you know, even to the outside, a mundane life will have incredible stories in it. But you have a story you definitely know you want to tell. So it's not as if you're just cobbling together any old shit for a show for the sake of it. You're driven by... And that's what one of the great things about Edinburgh is. There are people... There are all sorts of different types of comedy up there. There's just thousands of different comedians. And one of the best shows I ever saw up there was a guy called James Bannon. A show called Running With The Firm. And it wasn't stand-up in the traditional sense, but he'd been an undercover copper who infiltrated Millwall's hooligan firm in the 1980s. And it was one of the most... I think I saw it five times.
Wow.
And someone's just got a really good story to tell, and they can make it funny. That's, you're giving the audience so much more. You're giving them a different type of show. So actually, it doesn't matter if you haven't been going that long, because you know the story you're trying to tell. And that in itself, for an hour, man, it's incredible.
Yeah. And what I also feel lucky for is then what you're talking about with politics now. It's like we are constantly being given more and more stuff, so I'm not worried that, like, after this show it's like that's done, because literally this is like a never-ending cycle
that's
of
right.
shit news which my dad keeps getting involved in.
Good on him.
And so Matt, what about you? Because obviously, how long have you been doing it now? Because we should explain, you were previously not quite of Alistair's stature.
I used to work for the party.
You used to be a Labour press officer.
It's so almost Orwellian that I still refer to it like that, but I worked for the Labour Party for a while, yeah.
And was Alistair your boss?
Oh, God, no. I worked in the East Midlands Regional Office, so I was a very lowly
cog.
When
was this?
So I was working for the party 2005 to 2007.
Okay.
So sort of later years. And then worked for MPs and worked in local government as an advisor. So for me, it's slightly different because... So I think this is my 10th Edinburgh show on the run of doing a solo show about politics. And that, you know, in the, you know, your first show is kind of everything you've got to date. That's kind of your greatest hits at that point. It's like your first album. In a way, that's your easiest one. The second year is the hardest, because then you're like, oh my God, you just ditched everything you've had. Although actually, because you've started relatively recently, that's not a problem you've got really. You're used to writing a show in a year.
Yeah.
So you're sort of match fit.
Hopefully.
So then next year's show isn't going to be as daunting. Well, it won't be, because you're like, well, I've had to write a show in a year before. So mine, basically, I write all year round, and then basically whatever I've got that can still be used in August is there. But obviously, we keep having events in June and July, like general elections, resignations. So most of it gets lost. And then I'm in a period where in June and July, I'm basically writing it. And then in August, it's an hour about the year. Whereas this year, it's different, actually. It is more a sense of a frustration, particularly at the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And, you know, shining a light on the horror that it's become in a funny way and with silly voices. And then I always have a President Trump section, which is handy.
Because you do impressions, we should make the point, you do impressions as well.
Well, being able to impersonate makes it a lot easier, because then I can sort of, I always think, well, I can do, the structure for me is generally start with the Tories because they're in government and that's fair. Earn the audience's trust, because the Labour stuff is going to hurt them more, because they tend to be more Labour. So get them on side with the Tory stuff, give them a damn good thrashing, then tell them that Corbyn's a racist, see how long I can deal with that for about, you know, before the clock runs down on that, move on from that, give the SNP a wallop, and then, you know, Farage, Trump, and then I end with, you know, it's an honour to be here. Well, that sort of thing. And just do, basically. Sort of
just to cheer them up at
the
end.
Yeah, just to kind of, sort of get them back on side.
Yeah. I did enjoy it. I was definitely laughing at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the thing that, I don't even know, I've been doing this, it is stand-up. I've tried to resist calling it stand-up, but it's basically a stand-up thing. And I'm going on tour in the autumn.
Amazing.
I'm going on holiday instead of going to Edinburgh.
Wow.
But I've been doing this, I mean, you are right, it is basically like the first album. So the story starts in 2005 when I first started covering politics.
Oh, wow.
And politics was really boring. For about a year, the biggest story in politics was that, like, David Cameron didn't have a tie on. And now I sort of chronicled what you were just saying about how it's got madder and madder. But you're right. I don't know if I do it again. I've got nothing. I've got to start all over again.
You have to write. I mean, you have to gig all the time.
Yeah.
There is no substitute. So you're doing, like, comedy clubs and things?
No, quite the opposite.
What?
I did my first hour last year at the Cheltenham Festival.
Right.
And then I sold out the Bloomsbury Theatre in May. I think it was just before you were there or just after.
Yes, yeah.
And I've done a couple of book festivals and stuff, and then I'm going on tour the autumn.
So you've got a book?
No.
Right.
But they wanted me, and they're a nice sort of harmless audience to.
Yeah, I mean, there's no substitute for constantly gigging. That is the only way to improve.
But also, like,
if you're going on tour, you need to find the time.
You are right.
So I actually don't want to be a, like, political comedian. I want to do this show, and then actually I want to be able to, like, do a whole show about sex, if that's what I want to do.
But, like, the politics of sex, in the sense of small people.
Always be feminist, yeah. Like, because that's everything I do. Even if you see my show, it's all about, like, women and my perspective as a young girl. You know, one of the beginning bits is that I've been competing with Tony Blair my whole life. So it's really fucked me up, basically, because I've wanted to act like a man with power since a very young age.
Wow. Because he ruined your...
Because he had all my dad's attention when I was a kid, and he was, like, the Prime Minister. And my mum was also Cherie Blair's special advisor, so they were both working there full-time. So I guess that's a kind of, like, gender thing. But I'm also just, like, I just love talking about, like, relationships and the smaller things.
Yeah.
So I'm just, like, just live so that I can have all these weird experiences that I can talk about.
Is it important for you? Because it would also mean that wouldn't be a show that is about you being Alistair Campbell's daughter.
Yeah, totally. I want this show to be, like, you know, I've always been Alistair Campbell's daughter because he's Alistair Campbell and I love him. So I've never been, like, I'm going to change my name. I don't want to be his daughter. But I thought I'd write this show and talk, you know, I talk about everything that people always want to know about, like, being Alice Campbell's daughter. And then I hope after that I can sort of just try and be me.
It's fascinating. I don't know how you make that shift without, you know, then wanting to just do sort of unexpected item in the bagging area type.
Well, I don't think it would ever be that, but I think it would be much more like just Amy Schumer's the first person that's coming into my head, but that kind of feminist comedy, and that you're talking about just things that women go through day in, day out. And it is political, obviously, but it's not like Westminster. Because that's why the show's called Why I'm Never Going Into Politics. Like,
yeah. So you, I don't, if your next show is very political, yes, it'll be like, hang on a minute. Well, tell you what, we'll move on and we'll talk about the current state of politics in a sec. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back. You're listening to the Red Box Podcast with me, Matt Jolly, joined in the studio by Grace Campbell and Matt Ford. So you've both touched on it a bit about the state of politics in general and the Labour Party in particular, which you know best. I don't really know where to start with the state of the Labour Party. I mean, whether it's position on Brexit, anti-Semitism, Jeremy Corbyn.
You know, my main reflection is this was all inevitable. The day he became leader, this was what was going to happen. And what I really have to guard against myself is people I know that voted for him, that overlooked, the information was given, they knew he'd been friends with Hamas and Hezbollah, they know what fellow travellers those politics bring, the prejudice that walks with it, and they overlooked it because we wanted a more left-wing Labour leader. And not only that, obviously incompetent and not up to the job, and now all these people, who by the way went to good schools and good universities, a lot of them, their political judgment really has been proven to be awful, and I have to really hold myself back from getting very angry at people about it, because people who should have known better allowed this to happen, and that's why we're here.
But it's interesting because, like, firstly, completely agree, but, like, my generation, all of my friends voted for him. All of my friends signed up to be those £3 members so that they could vote for him. Yeah. And I remember at the time, my mum kept being like, you know, if someone like my grandma, who's been a member of the Labour Party her whole life, has canvassed for the Labour Party whenever there's been any need to, these, like, £3 members, they're just like fair weather friends. They just came to get Jeremy Corbyn in and have done nothing for the Labour Party since. And I was quite guilty of that. Like, I used to argue with my parents about him because I was like 20 and I was like, he's like different, like, he's, do you know what I mean, like,
oh, different.
It was that awful thing of like, I was more left wing than my parents, and I thought he offered something different, and then as soon as he became leader, it was just like disappointment after disappointment, and now I don't meet anyone who doesn't regret voting for him.
It's awful, and it could have just been avoided, and you know, and that is partly also, you know, and I get on with Ed Miliband, but when he says, oh, I voted for chaos with Ed Miliband, you're like, you did give chaos to the Labour Party and arguably to Syria. So, like, let's not all pretend that would have been a smoother path. It would have been a different path that didn't involve Brexit. But the Labour Party now is the most extreme it has ever been. And it is a nasty place for Jewish people. And that is an unforgivable place to get to. And I can't believe I ever worked for it for a number of reasons. I can't believe they would ever employ an idiot like me. But
you've seen some of the people who work for the party now.
Well, exactly. Yeah. People are in charge of it. But it saddens me, is the worst thing about it. I feel so depressed about it. It's awful. It's really tragic. And to overlook the suffering of people who are suicidal, dismissed as, you know, disgruntled former members of staff.
That's just awful.
These are the whistleblowers on the Panorama programme.
That's awful. Yeah. There's just no humanity about it. And, you know, I dealt with people like Jeremy Corbyn before, and I knew his sort. They pose as genteel, calm, pleasant people, and that masks a ruthless political streak, an authoritarian political ideology, and a way of dealing with people who disagree with you that is frankly despicable. And I'd seen it in Labour Party branches across the UK. I left the day he became leader.
You left
because
the party.
I knew immediately what was going to happen. I didn't want to give it. I didn't want to fund it. I didn't want to. I've not voted for Labour since he became leader. I've not given a single penny to anything associated with them because I knew it was going to become this swamp. And I'm really sorry to have been proved right. Nothing would have pleased me more than for him to actually have been the moderate that people hoped he was going to be. But his record showed us, and the record of the hard left in the Labour Party showed us what was going to happen, and it has.
Do you think we could ever get back to
the glory days?
New Labour's maybe too far because that's quite toxic now, but do you think we could get back there?
Well, in
now,
a way, but isn't part of the problem that his success was born out of a reaction to New Labour?
Totally.
That's the... Yeah.
But New Labour
But
politics,
then vice, won't it happen the other way now?
You know, I mean, in a way, whenever anyone says, oh, you know, there's no going back from this, and that doesn't matter whether it's, you know, we're going to have coalition governments forever, and then we had a majority government again, and the Lib Dems were dead, and they were never going to come back, and now the Lib Dems are back again. You know, every time somebody says, well, that's that finished, that thing can never happen. It, of course, can happen in politics.
Yeah, and where New Labour, the brand, the phrase might be toxic on parts of the left, but that point on the political spectrum I still think is where most people are.
Yeah.
Is socially liberal, internationalist, tough on crime, strong on defence, more money for schools and hospitals. I don't think that's particularly radical. I don't think that's particularly toxic. I think that's where most people are. And I think most people, if you gave them a relentless pro-immigration message, would come round. And if you sold the benefits of the EU in the same way that people have sold the negatives, i.e. for 40 years and relentlessly, the tone in this country would be very different. I think that's where politics needs to get to. But the problem is that the only way you can save the Labour Party now, if you think it should be saved and if you want it to be saved, is for 200,000 to 300,000.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thousands of people to join it. It's for basically someone to trigger a leadership contest and say, if you want to save the Labour Party and if you want to save the country from a Tory Brexit, help me lead the... Let's say if Jess Phillips said, I'm going to stand for the leadership, I need 300,000 people in this country to help me change Labour and change the country, then maybe it's game on.
We had a Times YouGov poll in July, which showed that she was one of the least popular amongst the current membership. Anyway, her and Tom Watson were the ones who were definitely the most divisive.
Yeah, but that's because but
that's the whole reason why you need to pull the episode.
Yeah.
That's why you need the new members. Yeah. You need to do what he did.
Yeah.
Bring in the new people and defeat it. But whether people can be bothered, who knows?
Do you think there's... I mean, obviously we had the performance art experiment that was Change UK, but do you think there is a new party, or does it have to come out of one of the existing party structures?
They've shown that it's really hard. And obviously,
they made it look very difficult.
The new party that's done well is the Brexit Party.
Yeah.
So new parties can succeed. Whether Boris gets those people back now, probably does.
Mm.
But let's see. It is hard. Maybe some of us need to be a bit less sniffy about the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
You know, we're all there going, if only there was some socially liberal pro-European centre ground party that didn't wear socks with sandals. Like, if that's going to be the... If that's the red line.
I like Joe Swinson as well.
Yeah, I like Joe Swinson. Mm. And I like Vince Cable. And I like a lot of what they stand for. So then... Some of us, I think, just need to get over ourselves a bit and maybe look at the Lib Dems, because they're the only UK-wide pro-European party.
And, of course, your dad famously voted Lib Dem, as we know. Oh, the European, you get kicked out of the Labour Party faster for voting Lib Dem than you do for being a massive racist. What, have you always voted Labour? Have you ever been tempted by the Lib Dems?
No, I voted Lib Dem in the European elections.
Was that a whole house decision?
It wasn't, actually. I don't think I spoke to my parents about it, but... like, for all of the obvious reasons, I just think Corbyn's stance on Brexit has been terrible. So
are you still a member of the Labour Party?
No.
Oh, right.
No,
I stopped being... Otherwise you're about to be suspended.
No, I stopped being a member probably, like, a year after he'd been leader, mainly because my mum was paying it, and she was like, do you want to be it? And I was like, no, I don't like him. So.
That's bad when you cancelled, even though you weren't paying it.
Yeah,
it wasn't
yeah,
even
yeah.
like I could save some money.
No, I was like, don't care, over it. they don't like my dad, so... But, yeah, I would struggle voting for the Labour Party. If there was a general election tomorrow, I'd really struggle, which is sad.
I mean, it'd be a surprise if we had an election in the middle of August, but it's possible an election is coming at some point, if only because Boris Johnson will realise come the autumn that he doesn't have a majority and it's quite difficult to get anything through the House of Commons. So what do you think happens? Where does politics go in the next year?
In a general election, Boris beats Corbyn.
By a tiny amount, though, would you say? But I think the Lib Dems would probably do really well.
I hope the Lib Dems would do well, but I think... Corbyn is collapsing the Labour Party, and I think so many people can't bring themselves to vote for him, so maybe they go Lib Dem. Maybe you don't get an overall majority, but I think the one thing you can say for Boris is, in a general election campaign, you can see him being very muscular.
And getting a lot of those Brexit Party people.
And to be fair to the Brexiteers, and I always have to remind myself of this, is they won by a fair enough margin. 3 years on, that has not been delivered. Now, we know why it hasn't been delivered, but nevertheless, I would be frustrated. I would also like to think that I would have begun to rethink things a bit, but nevertheless, Boris at least makes Brexiteers feel good, and he totally believes in it, as much as Boris can ever believe in anything. So he is going to sort of beat the drum for Brexit, and he's going to do all that. You know, we can be a great country. You know, why all the pessimism, by the way? And actually, that will it doesn't work on me, and I don't think it works on either of you two. But it will work on a certain section of people who go, you know what? We're sick of feeling miserable about it. And
well,
he will rally people.
I do. Well, what I think is that he has been right in pointing out that Theresa May treating Brexit like a sort of terrible weather event that had to be got through.
Yes.
Rather than looking like she thought it was a good idea. Actually, over the course of 3 years, does affect public opinion and even the opinion of her colleagues. If she looks like she thinks it's a terrible idea, why would anyone go and vote for it in the House of Commons?
Exactly.
And actually, it is a ridiculous thing to keep saying, if only we'd been a bit more upbeat, everything would be all right. But there is something about that in politics and leadership that actually saying this is a good idea, we can go out there and make a success of it, that will carry some people.
Well, that's it. It doesn't change the deal, and it doesn't change the economic reality of Brexit at all. But what it does change...
A massive sigh at the mention of the
people
Brexit. We're back there. It's coming, though.
I know. It's terrifying that it's him that's doing it.
The next you know, season in the box set is back in the autumn. It's going to be the same all over again, but at record speed. It's off, because it has to all be done in a couple
but
of weeks.
But imagine that election campaign. So the last one, Theresa May basically chucked it away and didn't do any... Let's say Boris and Corbyn agreed to do face-to-face debates. Boris is going to get on him. He's lying. He would buy the Russian friends of his who try to kill people. And look at his face. He knows he will get absolutely in his face.
I have to do Boris Johnson in my show. You do it so well.
Come on. And how are you?
No, I can't.
Just a little bit.
You just put me to shame.
Just a little bit.
I can't. It's just... So I have this story where I went to a Miley Cyrus concert with him.
Cool.
With my dad. And we went down...
Well, just the three of you?
Well, no, my dad got me tickets and then we were in the box with Boris Johnson and his daughters because that's how privilege works.
So you know how many kids he's got then?
Well, I've met two of them.
How big was the box?
And we went down to meet Miley Cyrus before she went on stage and he was mayor at the time and he shakes her hand and he goes, I'm a very big fan of the Hoedown Throwdown.
Oh, God.
Because it's in my bit where I talk about how he's a hoe and no one's talking about it, you know, he's a slag.
He is, yeah.
But your impersonation is so much better than mine, so I'm going to watch videos of you.
Yeah. That's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
Wow. You see, so there were some perks to being the daughter of somebody working
in politics. No, it's been, honestly, the fertile ground that I've been given. You would have been silly not to have done comedy.
And what about, without ruining your show completely, what about the Vladimir Putin's children?
We went up the London Eye with them and I got into some trouble. Basically, Mrs. Putin was asking Cherie Blair where she could get the girls some shoes. I do an accent, but I'm not going to do it now. I'm already feeling very insecure about my linguistics.
What, a Cherie Blair impression or a Mrs. Putin impression?
I do both.
Okay.
And then anyway, Cherie Blair's listing all the different shoe shops she could take the girls to get some shoes, and I just butted in and I was like, why don't you just take them to Clark's?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I know, but basically this, the whole setup of my show is that I was like a proper bully when I was a kid.
Oh, really? But,
well, I was just really arrogant, yeah. Because of who my dad was.
It's
do
his
you
fault.
Blame me?
It's all his fault.
He was like very powerful.
You just went around
very...
giving everyone the hairdryer treatment.
So, and I was like his favourite person in the world. So I was like, God, I'm basically just as powerful as him.
Wow. Yeah. What an amazing experience.
I know, I've come out the other side, thank God. I'm very insecure now.
That's healthy.
I'm not, yeah.
It's healthy for a comedian.
You need a balance. Yeah. You need a balance. Did you go to Clark's?
No, but there's a picture of us on the London Eye and the girl looks like she's wearing wallabies.
Well, I don't think we could top that, unless you've got any...
My childhood stories, I'm afraid, are far more mundane.
You didn't go on the London Eye with any world leaders?
No, I grew up in Snenton, which is an inner city area of Nottingham. So, there's no glamour there, I'm afraid.
Well, okay, let's, before we wind up, do your proper plugs. When are you on and how can people find you?
I'm on at the Gilded Balloon Wee Room in the Bristow Square, Teviot. I pitched that terribly, I'll say again. I'm on at the Gilded Balloon Teviot in the Wee Room at 3:15 every day. And my name is Grace Campbell and you can find me on Instagram and it's Disgrace Campbell.
Perfect. 3:15, that's great. That's like,
I know,
plenty of drinking time after that.
I know. Well, I'm going to try and not booze.
You know what? You know what? That's really good. I barely booze in Edinburgh anymore. Yeah, it's so much better for it.
I'm not boozing that much anyway at the moment. So.
No, I think that's a good idea.
What about you, Matt?
My show, Brexit Pursued by a Bear, is on at the Pleasance Courtyard at 8:30 every night. And on the 14th of August at the Gilded Balloon TV, I'm interviewing Kezia Dugdale. And on the 20th of August at the Gilded Balloon TV, I'm interviewing Nicola Sturgeon.
Yep. Oh, and I have to say, on the 21st, I'm interviewing Ruth Davidson. Me and my dad are doing our live podcast recording with Ruth Davidson and then the two more people I'm not allowed to say yet.
Oh, yeah. We shall see.
Mystery.
But it's not Nicola, because you stole her from us.
Excellent.
Well, my huge thanks to you both. And if you are, you know, if you're not going to Edinburgh, you want to go and see somebody who's apparently not done nearly enough practice, you can find details of my tour at mytimesplus.co.uk. My huge thanks to Grace and to Matt. For me, Matt Jordy, it's goodbye.